Welcome to another episode of the podcast that teaches you more about the world and the people in it in 20 minutes or less. I am your host and the queen of curiosity, Chess. Firstly, I want to thank you for listening to the first episodes of my podcast. I did my best, learned some hard lessons, and have charted a tentative path forward for my vision. That being said, I have decided to move away from the interview format. While all my interviewees were exceptional, scheduling and recording interviews is challenging. I found that I wasn't able to discuss the things I wanted as openly as I had planned. I hope you'll find my new format as or more engaging. In addition to me manning the soapbox for the duration, I'm adding a new segment called The Quiz of Curiosity. Listen to the end to find out how to participate. This week we're going to be discussing the conflict between Israel and Palestine. I am 31 years old. I have not lived very long, admittedly. But for my short time on Earth, I can remember the consistent narrative I've heard about Israel and Palestine. Their endless struggle for peace, to have their legitimacy recognized, and terrorist attacks coming from both sides make it seem like an eternal struggle with no potential for resolution. I can't remember a presidential election cycle where the question of how to achieve peace in the Middle East didn't come up. Increasingly, state and federal governments are requiring their employees to sign pledges saying they won't boycott Israel, though this is a direct violation of the First Amendment. Currently, 28 states and the federal government have such laws. To boycott Israel in certain states can lead to termination of your government contracts or fines. Political leaders are expected to kowtow to Israel's demand to be allowed to continue to manifest a religious nation state, regardless of the cost. Questioning Israel's right to expel the Palestinian people or to deny them basic humanitarian aid can earn you the label of anti-Semite. How did we get here? Why are our First Amendment rights being curtailed in favor of a country half a world away? Is there a way to move forward that allows both nations to survive and thrive? We don't have time to go over every step that led to two actual wars and the current occupation of Palestine. You, a curious person, should take the time to look into it after you're done listening. The history is complicated, but it's important to have a basic understanding of it. Before we get into that, there's a term we need to understand, and you may have heard it. If you're anything like me, which is to say a heathen, you likely have no idea what it means. Zionism is a political organization that originated in the late 1800s. It aims to return the Jewish people to their ancestral homeland, Jerusalem. This movement is supported by people of all religions, including Christians. All Abrahamic religions, which includes Jewish people, Christians, and Muslims, consider this to be a holy land. It's home to 9 UNESCO World Heritage Sites. If you've ever heard of a little thing called the Crusades, you'll know that the sovereignty of the nation and who rules it has always been hotly contested. From 1517 to 1917, the area that's now considered Israel was ruled by the Ottoman Empire. After winning World War I, control of Palestine was ceded to Britain. The newly formed League of Nations supported this by issuing a mandate for Palestine, essentially giving Great Britain the right to establish a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Britain, encouraged by wealthy Zionist Walter Rothschild, issued what's known as the Balfour Declaration. Ostensibly, the intention of the declaration was to establish the rights of Jewish people to a homeland that would be located in Palestine. On paper, it seemed like the ideal solution. Jewish people who had been mercilessly persecuted in pogroms by Nazis and Russians had a place to go to establish a nation-state where they could live freely in accordance with their religion, and they would get to reclaim their ancestral home. Relatively undeveloped Palestine could reach its full potential and elevate both the Jewish population and existing Arab population. All good, right? That'll be a no from Palestine, dog. British and Jewish people, both already located in Palestine and abroad, took to work immediately setting up shop in the form of purchasing land and establishing systems of government. The British administration declared Hebrew an official state language in addition to Arab. As Palestine at this time was mostly undeveloped, the Jewish population of Palestine rapidly grew. Palestinian people, understandably, were not hugely fond of this. As they realized that the Jewish people were organizing and starting to eclipse the Arabs in land ownership, Palestinian rebellion started. Both Israel and Palestine believed they had inalienable rights to the property and set up a government to rule it. Before 1948, Palestine stretched between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River. Today, Palestine occupies two small, discrete areas. Gaza, currently under Israeli occupation, sits adjacent to the Mediterranean Sea and shares a border with Egypt. The West Bank sits, well, to the west of Jordan. Israel surrounds these two areas, sharing borders with both Egypt and Jordan. The situation is tense. There are routinely terrorist attacks from both sides, some targeting children and aid workers specifically. Israel views attacks from Palestine as an attack on their sovereignty and the work of insurgents. Palestine believes the same. Israel's current occupation of the Gaza Strip, which currently has a population of approximately 2 million Palestinians, is controlled by Hamas, one of two Palestinian political parties. Hamas is considered to be the far-right extremist movement. The party is largely held responsible for most attacks on Israeli settlements. Israel has set up blockades to Gaza, theoretically to reduce the number of suicide attacks from Hamas. In reality, the fortified roadblocks and policing of Gaza's airspace prevents free movement of Palestinians in Gaza for work or travel. The blockading has led to a high rate of poverty and further escalated tensions. As the occupier, Israel is required under international law to provide basic food and medical care to the inhabitants of the Strip, but there is some evidence to suggest that Israel is intentionally withholding supplies. So, what should we do? Brighter and better people than me have puzzled over that question for decades at this point. One suggestion that's routinely offered is the two-party solution, which would divide Palestine and Israel and grant sovereignty to both. Because of the cultural and religious significance to both Arabs and Jewish people, many think it would follow that they could work out some agreement for the stewardship of the land. The issue is that Palestine believes, and there is evidence to support, that Israel won't be satisfied with a two-state solution and will continue to work to stamp out Arabs that inhabit land Israel perceives of as theirs. Jewish people feel that the hurts caused by Arabs is too deep and their crimes too numerous to ever coexist peacefully. Israelis feel that the state should continue the mass eviction of Arabs, which started in 1940. There are approximately 7 million Palestinians displaced globally as a result of these actions. Another aspect to consider in the current conflict is the attitude toward Israel from some major global players, especially the United States. Israeli lobbyists, notably AIPAC, have turned to American politics to help turn the tide in Israel. Zionist American politicians have been used to further Israel's interests. The U.S., in addition to selling Israelis the weapons they use to keep peace in the Middle East and levy against Palestinians, give the country about $3 billion in aid annually. This support has increased the perceived legitimacy of the Israeli occupation worldwide. It's worth considering why the United States, a nation set apart by its dogged refusal to recognize a national religion, a nation that was founded on the belief that you have the right to practice whatever religion you would like, would support the installation of religious nation-state in the Middle East. This is a strategic move on the part of the U.S. While Zionists exist at every level of the government and incontrovertibly work toward the goal of a one-state solution, Israel only, the reason for our support is more practical. The U.S. gets an ally in the Middle East and can help protect its interests in the region. Oil. Heroin and oil. While giving them aid and weapons might seem logical, we must ask ourselves why domestic policy is so influenced by Israel. The Israeli anti-boycott movement ensures that American citizens can't use one of the most American forms of protest to sanction a country for its wrongdoing. This allows Israel's reign to go unchecked and to be subsidized by average Americans. I would hate to editorialize too much, but this seems wrong to me. If it seems wrong to you, too, I would advise you getting in touch with your local lawmakers to ask them why they feel comfortable impinging on our rights to free speech to aid what is, at this time, an illegal occupation. If you're interested in learning more, I would recommend you check your local library. Always look for unbiased sources to inform your opinions. I am not an unbiased source, but I do try to remain as objective as I reasonably can. If you think I got something wrong, I would love to talk to you about it. I love being wrong because it's a chance to learn something new. And on that note, it's time for our first round of the Quiz of Curiosity. Curiosity Quiz. Quizosity. It'll work pretty simply. If you've managed to stay listening this long, I'm about to ask you a question. If you know the answer or can be bothered to drag your little sausages to Google to look it up, please send me an email at thequeenofcuriosity@gmail.com or shoot me a tweet at aqueenascurious. The first person to get me the correct answer will get a very fancy, very special Queen of Curiosity sticker and a nice handwritten note from me thanking you for your support. In the interest of transparency, I will post the first correct answer on my Twitter, at aqueenascurious, with a timestamp. Now, here's the question. In what book did Sir Isaac Newton lay out the principles of his three laws of motion? Like I said, if you know the answer, please get at me via email at thequeenofcuriosity@gmail.com or Twitter at aqueenascurious. If you like this podcast, please rate and subscribe wherever you happen to be listening. I would appreciate any feedback, positive or negative, in my inbox or on Twitter. Thanks for listening. I'll have a new episode up for you next Thursday. Stay curious.